This is Conor Lennon from UN News. Digital finance is transformational and promises huge benefits to the world's most vulnerable citizens, says Achim Steiner, who heads up the UN development programme, UNDP. Mr. Steiner spoke to me ahead of the launch of a new report from a special UN task force which spells out how digital finance can empower citizens. He began by explaining how the report came about.
Well, you will recall that Secretary General Guterres a couple of years ago initiated a discussion about the United Nations better understanding the implications of what was happening in the universe of digital technology. And the Digital Cooperation Panel laid out a number of key areas that he had invited to advise him, where the UN has both a significant role as a convener, but also in more practical terms, in some key areas as a facilitator and supporter, particularly to developing countries, in being able to harness the opportunities of this digital revolution and the opportunities that it implies. Out of this original mandate, the Secretary General then defined a particular focus on how fintech, digital finance, could in fact help us to overcome the challenges of financing the SDGs, the 2030 Agenda for Development. And that is why about 18 months ago, the Secretary General invited me and Maria Ramos, the former CEO of Absa Bank of South Africa, to form a task force that would examine both what is happening in this field worldwide and what are some of the key implications for financing SDGs, and obviously also what implications for the United Nations in this vital field that will define whether we can actually implement the SDGs or continue to struggle with essentially the question of how to finance them.
And were there any surprises for you and your team?
Well, I think first of all, perhaps the most positive surprise was that the task force, which has very senior leadership figures from the financial sector, the technology sector, but also from central banks, from governments, international financial institutions, including my colleagues from UNICEF and from DESA and UN Women also, at the CEO level, very quickly converged on realizing that we were addressing an issue that is both evolving extremely fast, that indeed is proving to be central not only to understanding how our financial system will evolve, but indeed of how enormous opportunities are emerging for addressing some of the traditional constraints of our 20th century financial system. Exclusion, the ability to combine private sector investment rationale with public purpose, but also recognizing that in this enormously fast evolving technology horizon, there are some significant risks. And therefore, what is happening with digital finance is not only a consequence of technology. It's not only technology led. Its ultimate success in reshaping the way we deal with finance in the 21st century is also a matter of public policy and regulation. And I think that led us in the end to, you know, name this report as the People's Money Report, because it takes us back to the core realization that whether it's our domestic savings, our pensions, the taxes we pay, it is people's money that is being intermediated by governments, by hedge funds, by banks. And I think that opportunity that digital finance represents to reconnect individual citizens and their money with its use and also its deployment in our economies is perhaps the single most significant opportunity to change the dynamic within our financial system and how money is invested.
You said yourself that this is a very fast-moving area. Do you think that governments, legislators, and the UN need to do a lot more work to really understand the benefits and the risks?
Absolutely, and I preface my response by saying what the task force agreed is that it would not try to second guess the world of digital finance. One, because change and new opportunities are arising almost on a daily basis. None of us can currently predict the nature of a financial system, particularly in the digital finance universe, 2, 3, 5, or 10 years down the line. What we wanted to understand is what are the drivers. What is shaping both the private sector engagement in this field? What is shaping public responses? And thirdly, how do we not fall into the trap that these new opportunities become an amplifier of inequality? And this is particularly central for the United Nations. I mean, its development mandate, its purpose is to help nations collaborate, but also to address the developmental priorities. And for UNDP in particular, understanding the significance of the digital gap that still exists in fundamental issues such as connectivity to broadband. We work very closely here with our colleagues in the ITU also, but also with partners such as UNICEF and UN Women, who have been exploring frontier possibilities of connecting women and youth to this digital universe, are critical. Secondly, what is particularly important is that this global phenomenon could risk leaving many developing countries behind if they don't, at the central government level and public policy domains, quickly develop both an understanding of the significance and the implications, for example, of the emergence of cryptocurrencies, and shape their national policy in a proactive way. It would leave them as takers, and you know, one of the phenomena we observe and the risks with technology, that you very quickly have market concentration. And for the United Nations, it is critical that we maintain a global digital economy that is not subject to the polarization that we experience in the geopolitical domain. So the ability to convene the world around some of the great opportunities of the 21st century, to learn from different countries on how they're addressing the opportunity of technology with regulatory and public policy initiatives, and thirdly, to realize how particularly in poverty eradication and in reaching, you know, billions of people who in the traditional financial system of the 21st century, of the 20th century rather, simply did not have a way to connect. If you don't have an address, you don't have security, you don't have a credit rating, you do not exist. And today we see extraordinary developments of market traders who often may just have limited numeracy being able to transact on cell phones, digital platforms. We see, for example, credit lines being opened, as we saw in China in the midst of this pandemic, to small, medium-scale enterprises, 20 million loans, each one transacted in a matter of seconds because of the algorithms and the opportunities of digital finance, and governments being able to raise capital from their domestic markets through microfinance investments, but with millions of people. These are the opportunities that need to be shaped, and that's where the UN has both a global convening role, but in the work of the development system of the UN also, I think, a very significant and direct role in building capacity and broadening the opportunities for developing countries to harness these technologies.
And do you have any best case examples of developing countries which have seen a really significant shift thanks to digital finance?
Well, this was perhaps one of the pleasant surprises. We have hundreds. There are probably thousands out there because, you know, for a number of years, there was a focus on some of the pioneer countries, whether it was Kenya with M-Pesa or China with its digital finance platforms. But actually, as we began to look and convene, and the task force, which, by the way, is composed of very senior leaders in the private tech sector, in the finance sector, but also public policy, we began to discover that actually this is a phenomenon that is unfolding virtually everywhere in the world. And startups, innovation, the opportunity of technology to experiment in different legislative contexts, I think have demonstrated to us that this is a revolution in the making, if you want. And it goes from, you know, the green bond market, for instance, where we have seen a massive expansion in recent years, partly because people with their money want the financial intermediaries, their pension funds, the hedge funds, the investment funds, to actually invest with the purpose of promoting clean energy. We have seen in Bangladesh the ability to raise with millions of small savers who aggregate their money in order to finance national infrastructure. And you know, the pandemic, which came at the tail end of this task force's work, I think has further amplified the extraordinary opportunity for governments to harness digital finance platforms in order to reach those who have traditionally been left behind, but also to inject into the economy not only the significant bailout packages for large companies and corporations, but for those who actually represent the vast majority of the workforce and indeed of business. I mean, in many countries, over 90% of business is small, medium-scale enterprises. If they do not have access to both financial and fiscal stabilization measures, but in the end also to credit lines with which to invest, they will simply be left behind. And that is why inclusion emerged as such a central part of the task force's work also.
And how has the pandemic made a difference to the extent to which these tools are being used in these, particularly in developing countries?
Well, without putting a scientific number to it, I would argue that things that perhaps many of us anticipated could begin to, you know, emerge over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years have suddenly happened in a matter of weeks. And we have seen governments stand up digital cash transfer schemes in a matter of weeks, reaching millions of households in countries. Pakistan, for instance, over 10 million households. In Togo, in Honduras, I mean, wherever you look right now, the pandemic, first of all, allowed governments to understand the significance in being able to overcome traditional limitations in identifying the most vulnerable and secondly reaching them. The ability for governments to maintain business continuity emerged in the work of UNDP as one of the top priorities in a lockdown situation. How does central government, provincial and local government communicate? How do you maintain the capacity to act and respond? The ability also of central parts of government institutions to function, parliaments, if parliaments could not convene, being able to provide them with licenses so that they could have virtual meetings to adopt emergency and supplementary budgets was another fascinating frontier that probably for most countries had never been tried before and is now common practice. So I think we have broken through many, let's say, thresholds and territories of the unknown, and governments are experimenting and exploring as never before with the possibilities and the opportunities of digital. And I think maintaining an educational system during a pandemic is going to be another frontier. So digital connectivity, connecting all schools to broadband, these are fundamental advances that I think we will see happen far more rapidly as a consequence of the pandemic than we could have even envisaged 6 months ago in the task force.
So you think the benefits outweigh the risks?
I would say the benefits, the possibility, the realm of the possibilities and therefore the benefits associated with it are extraordinary. I mean, they are transformational and they are already evident, I think, in our daily lives. I mean, you pick up a cell phone or a smartphone and just look at how much of your daily information and even transactional activity is already happening on digital platforms. But this is just the beginning. And yet, I think it is important, and the task force certainly pays a great deal of attention to it. If it is only technology-led, then it risks, first of all, a very narrow view of digital frontiers. And particularly in this field, we have seen very rapid concentration amongst very few actors who are early adopters and startups who then dominate a market. How do you regulate for competition and choice in the consumer rights perspective? Secondly, cybercrime is a major phenomenon that countries must work on both in domestic legislation and international cooperation. The risk of exclusion, we have seen in the early phase the exclusion on the basis of algorithms that either by design or by default simply excluded entire population groups. This is a great risk because it could actually amplify inequality. And finally, the way we deal with data. It is one of the issues of our time that data is the new gold, if you want, but it is also potentially a great risk to fundamental rights, to privacy, and to the way that data is used either in the interests of citizens or at their expense. And I think in all of these areas, the task force has highlighted the centrality of, alongside the technology frontier, there is a frontier of public policy and regulatory frameworks that will ensure that we indeed have the benefits outweighing the risks.